since leaving the Air Force.
And if you can give your the years that you were in the military, your years of service.
I was in from 1958 to 1978. I was a navigator in various aircraft, tanker and transport aircraft, flew last in C-141s at McGuire Air Force Base. I was also an intelligence officer most of my career, as my desk job, so to speak. And I, in that period, frequently, you know, briefed generals and congressmen on our capabilities and the threat to our forces.
And what's your
sense
about that event?
Well, I was normally, like I mentioned, a briefing officer, and I would come to work 4 o'clock or so in the morning. And on the morning of January 18th, 1978, I drove through the main gate at McGuire, and I noticed that there was red lights out on the runway, and that probably something was going on out on the runways there because of all the red lights and, you know, like police cars and fire trucks and so on. And didn't think too much about it until I got to 21st Air Force Command Post, is where I worked. And I would go in there and prepare a briefing
for the position,
generals. I was a deputy director of intelligence for 21st Air Force, which controlled, well, half the military aircraft and flew the presidents and various VIPs and from the Mississippi River around to India. We had some 300 aircraft, and we were flying all kinds of missions, submarine crews, almost anything that had to do with the military airlift we accomplished. And this particular morning when I went into the command post, I was met by the head of the command post, and he said, "It's been a very exciting evening, that we've had UFOs in the, you know, over the McGuire all night, and that one had apparently landed, or possibly crashed, at Fort Dix, and that when a military policeman came upon the alien, that he had pulled out a gun and shot them." And I said, you know, a foreigner, like, you know, an alien. I was a little bit confused by him saying alien. He says, "No, an alien from outer space." He was very specific about the fact that an alien from outer space had been shot at Fort Dix, and that it had run away after being wounded and headed for McGuire. Now, McGuire and Fort Dix just have a fence between them, and this alien supposedly climbed the fence or went under it or whatever and got to McGuire and died out on the end of the runway. And the security police were out there and had captured the body, so to speak, and were guarding it. And he said that a C-141 from Wright-Patterson was coming in to pick up the plane. And that made me stand up, because I didn't realize that Wright-Patterson had C-141s. I thought Military Airlift Command was the only one who owned C-141 aircraft. So I was like, you know, my gosh, what's going on here? And he says, "We want you to brief this at the, you know, stand-up general briefing this morning and explain what happened to everybody." And I was like, "You want me to tell General Tom Sadler and everybody in the command post that, you know, we captured an alien?" And they said, "Yes, we want you to brief that this morning." Well, I did some checking around, and I called the 38th Military Airlift Wing Command Post to check with them to see if, in other words, the story was the same that I was getting. And they said, yes, that they had heard that also. something, that this actually did happen, that an alien was found on the base. And later that morning, I was told that they decided not to brief it in the stand-up briefing. And so I didn't actually brief it. Now, the only other thing that was interesting is that that morning I carried what's code word down to the General Sadler's office, and I noticed some commotion going on in there, and that some of the security police people were there in rather disheveled and so on. And that General Sadler was a stickler for everybody looking perfect, and it was kind of surprising to see these people that obviously needed shaves and were in fatigues and so on there. So then I knew that that might tie into the story that I had heard. Now, after the briefing, I also went to the photo lab. Almost every day I went to the photo lab, because in your briefings you have, four screens, and you have to keep them all, you know, filled up with pretty pictures and so on. And there they indicated that they had taken pictures of something extraordinary. And I said, well, let me see them. And the sergeant was handing it to me, and his master sergeant says he can't see those. So all I know is that they had some pictures that I wasn't allowed to see. But normally, being the general's briefer, I had never been, you know, stopped from seeing any pictures that they had previously. It was very a serious operation and so on. There is nuclear assets on the base that they used to carry weapons back and forth to Europe and so on. I had done some checking around because I became interested. I talked to one of the security policemen who claims to have been out there, and he indicated that he essentially saw a small body that, you know, could have been like a child, but it seemed to have a larger than normal head. Now, one interesting thing is many of the key personnel on the base at that time who had a connection with this were quickly transferred from the wing commander on down, indicating that if you knew something, they tended to split you up, so to speak, so you couldn't talk about it. Oh, within a matter of weeks or whatever. Now, the security policeman told me that he was transferred within a few days. Matter of fact, he was taken to Wright-Patterson within the day or two and debriefed by a number of people and essentially told not to talk about it anymore. Now, his story to me was that, you know, they heard this going on the radios, and they heard that this chase was on, that the alien had been shot at Fort Dix, and they were chasing it towards McGuire. At least for whatever reason, it chose to run towards McGuire Air Force Base, and that both the state police and the military police were, you might say, chasing this person or alien, whoever it was. They came from what looked like a UFO. As I understand, it was a disc-shaped craft. Now, it was not they indicated to me that the UFOs had been in the area for quite some time that evening, and that they had them on radar, and that the tower operator had seen them, and some of the other aircraft in the area had apparently seen them as well. There was like six or eight people guarding the body. And then there was the commander of the security police unit. And then we were told, a few of us in the command post. And I assume that General Sadler was briefed about it. Well, I happened to meet a lady who claimed to have been out of White Sands, and it was an engineer working out there, and she was out hiking one day, and she told me that her and a couple of her friends had come up to the top of a hill, and they could look down in this valley, but only their heads were showing, you know, on the top of the hill. They just happened to be looking over and down the way the path was. And they had seen a UFO on the ground with a couple little aliens kind of like picking up rocks and stuff. And they watched it for an extensive period. It was, you know, several hundred yards away from them. And they got a pretty good look at it. And eventually they did, the aliens did see them. And the craft, they jumped in the craft and took off. But I had personally never seen anything until about 1962. We were flying tankers over England, and London Control asked us to intercept a UFO. And we happened to be done with our refueling mission. And, you know, we accepted the assignment. We were on the just over the North Sea, and they asked us to fly to the center of England. And we were doing, I don't know, some 400 miles an hour in a dive down to intercept this object. And they gave us headings, you know. And it was pretty much hovering in the rough Stonehenge area, Oxford Stonehenge area. And we got about, I'm not exactly sure, 20, 30 miles out, and I got it on radar. And it was a very large return. We used to fly up by the Firth of Forth Bridge, which is kind of like the San Francisco Bay Bridge, but it's a very large bridge. And the return was similar to that in size and in intensity. In other words, it was a very large radar return. And obviously London Control had it on their radar, and they were vectoring us to this object. And when we got about a mile from it, as a matter of fact, we were diving on the thing, and the whole aircraft was shaking, and it just took off into space, several thousand miles an hour, almost directly up. And now this was at night. It reminded me a lot of the shuttle launch, you know, something going up very quickly, at a high rate of speed. And frankly, at least to my knowledge, we had nothing like that capability. Matter of fact, we said something about, you know, have any kind of rocket launches from that area, and they said no, that we could just continue on our mission. So based on this lady's testimony and pretty much what we saw, I believe that there was something, you know, going on out there. My best guess is that it was a disc-type craft, but a fat disc. At least there was lights, you know, something like this at the top and at the bottom. It was more than just a straight plate-like object. It had a dome on the top of it. If the radar return was accurate, it was probably, you know, just guessing, 500 yards long or something. I mean, a huge, huge thing. Something that bothered me a little bit, that they were very friendly as we're doing the intercept on the thing. And, once the intercept was made and it had, essentially we chased it away, they didn't want to talk about it any further. Well, we wrote it in the navigator's log, fairly detailed, but yeah, this is Briarwood Lake in Medford, New Jersey, and we had just moved into this house. In any case, we were asleep about, I'm just guessing, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm asleep with my wife, and suddenly the room got very bright, in the middle of the night. So I got up out of bed and opened up the shade, but most of the light was even coming through the shade. And looked outside, and I don't know if most people have seen a submarine surfacing with all the water coming off. Well, this was like a disc about 30 feet in diameter surfacing. And what looked to me like water coming off of it. But frequently I had flown the Atlantic and Pacific and so on and seen the Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights, and around the craft were this ionization very similar to the Aurora Borealis. And it just kind of moved across the lake for a while and flew off at a fairly high rate of speed. Now, because of that, I've checked with a lot of the neighbors, and there's, I don't know the exact numbers, but there's like 40 or 50 lakes in Medford and Medford Lakes, and I frequently brought up the subject if they had seen anything. And it's amazing how many people have actually seen craft on the lakes. Well, occasionally I used to brief on the UFO sightings that had been occurred around the world to the general. One that sticks out in my mind is 1976. There was a famous sighting in Tehran, Iran, where an F-4 or a couple F-4s chased a UFO. That kind of sighting I would brief on occasion to the generals, and they would be, you know, more or less interested. Then someone would stop by and say, well, you know, I had my sighting. We were flying 106s over Colorado or whatever, and we dove on the UFO sitting there. Very similar to my story, except I was in a four-engine tanker, and they were in a, you know, two fighters, and they would dive on the thing. At that time, this particular colonel was telling me that the F-106 had set the world's record for speed, and they had these aircraft going as fast as they could, so to speak, diving on this UFO that was hovering in a valley in Colorado. And just like us, when they got near the craft, it took off and left them standing still, and they were doing like 1500 or something, whatever the top speed was at that time for these aircraft in a dive. That these who, you know, is flying these have this capability that is far beyond anything we've had for years and years, I think even today.
Well, what do you...
Something alien, something, at least in my opinion, non-human, that has a different form of propulsion and is coming here and, you know, doing reconnaissance and taking minerals or whatever it is that they happen to be doing. There are things going on, and they are being seen. You know, talked to a number of astronauts who have seen them, talked to other military pilots and the like who have seen them. And I remember Captain Ramage, who I used to work for in Athens, Greece, and he had one during the Korean War fly right off his wing, stay with him for like an hour, and do not only off his wing, but do, you know, acrobatic things around his aircraft. And I don't know the exact percentage of people, but probably 10% of the pilots and air crews that you ask about it have had sightings. One sat in this room here a few years ago, a colonel who was in intelligence, had his whole B-52 crew see it. And now, you know, these people don't, you might say, volunteer and sit in front of the camera and tell about it, but There's an awful lot of people who have seen them. They're not sure exactly what they are and what they're doing, but they know that they have advanced capability, and they usually see some kind of a solid object that appears to be made of some kind of metal, usually a gunmetal gray. Usually with, particularly at night, people usually report various lights around them. It seems to me, I was told that it was put in some kind of a, casket type thing, taken away, so to speak, flown away. Well, I think that in 1947 or in that time frame, something crashed out west. You know, whether it was Roswell, the specific Roswell that's been written about, but I think something happened out there, at least based on, you might say the talk in the military, that something crashed sometime out there. Well, the tendency is to make things classified when you don't know what's happening, secret, top secret, or whatever. And if it comes down from the president, it's a very high classification, probably code word above top secret. In other words, need to know, that kind of thing. And once that caveat or designation is put on something, it's very difficult to get it downgraded. I mean, you can go to the archives, and despite what they tell you, they have things going back to the Second World War that you still are not allowed to look at. And once these things are top secret or whatever, it's difficult to get it down. It just kind of moves on and forever stays top secret or whatever. And they just keep it very classified and very secret, basing it on, you can base it on the fact, for example, that let's say this craft had advanced technological capabilities. So you don't want the other side, so to speak, to know what you know and how these things work and the like. It's to your advantage to keep this secret. No, I think that it's time that these various programs come out. Now, one of the things that I've found is that the way it's been kept secret to a big extent is the fact of through ridicule. If it always had been just top secret, I think most of the world would know about it, to me. But they put in a kind of a ridicule factor, which made people... You'll hear somebody telling a story like this. They'll say, "Well, he must be crazy that he believes in UFOs." But they brought this out when anyone saw anything. You know, there'd be two people. We'll say one has funny hair and looks wild and so on, and the guy standing next to him is a police officer. Well, they always interviewed the wild guy and never put the police officer on the screen. My experience has been. An awful lot of policemen have seen these, an awful lot of FBI have seen these, an awful lot of military has seen it, and he might be having the, like, at times I used to carry nuclear weapons. And in other words, I was mentally fit to carry nuclear weapons, but I'm not mentally fit if I see a UFO. Well, this criticism and this ridicule is, I think, done more to keep the story coming out than almost anything else.